VOA. This is Tuesday, June 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. In Washington, I'm Ira Melman. Coming away just over a week after the deadliest mass shooting in American history, the U.S. Senate voted down a series of proposals to restrict the eligibility to buy firearms. Proponents say with continuing attacks, the time for such action must be now.
After September 11th, we decided that we weren't going to allow terrorists to get a hold of airplanes in order to kill civilians. Well, today they've moved on to assault weapons.
You'll hear both sides of that issue. The U.S. Secretary of State is trying to deal with opposition to some U.S. policy in Syria from within his own agency. We take a look at how. And the U.S. is one of the few developed countries that does not make possible time off from work for new parents. Julie Tabor will be here with some efforts to change that policy. All on today's International Edition. 8 days after the deadliest mass shooting in American history, the U.S. Senate voted down a series of proposals to restrict those eligible to buy firearms and expand the screening of gun purchasers. Late Monday, Republicans blocked two long-standing proposals that Democrats championed with renewed vigor after the Islamic State-inspired shooter Omar Mateen killed 49 clubgoers just over a week ago in Orlando, Florida. The vote took place just days after Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut commandeered the Senate floor for 15 hours last week to demand legislative action on gun violence.
Terrorists today are using assault weapons rather than IEDs or airplanes to attack Americans. After September 11th, we decided that we weren't going to allow terrorists to get a hold of airplanes in order to kill civilians. Well, today they've moved on to assault weapons. They specifically recruit lone wolf attackers to go to gun shows to buy assault weapons. And we should take the same tact. So we're not giving up. The American people aren't giving up. We'll watch how these negotiations play out over the next few days. But I will tell you this. They are simply evidence of the fact that Republicans know they are on the wrong side of the electorate. Democracy doesn't allow for this place to be this far out of step with 90% of Americans for very long.
Now, one measure he was talking about would block those on a variety of federal terror watch lists, including those barred from flying or from buying guns. Another would expand mandatory background checks for firearms purchases to include gun show and internet sales. Republicans said they couldn't vote for any proposal that did not provide a means for those wrongly placed on the terror watch list to contest the government's decision. And that position is echoed, or perhaps initiated, by the pro-gun lobbying organization, the NRA, or the National Rifle Association. Its executive director, Chris Cox, on the NRA website.
Let's set the record straight once and for all. The NRA believes that terrorists should not be allowed to purchase or possess firearms, period. Anyone on a terror watch list who tries to buy a gun should be thoroughly investigated by the FBI. If an investigation uncovers evidence of terrorist activity or involvement, the government should be allowed to immediately go to court, block the sale, and arrest the terrorist. At the same time, due process protections should be put in place that allow law-abiding Americans who are wrongly put on a watch list to be removed. Constitutional rights should not be denied without due process of law. Sadly, President Obama and his allies would prefer to play politics with this issue.
Monday's votes continued a pattern of legislative defeat for gun control measures in the aftermath of high casualty shooting rampages in the U.S., including the 2012 massacre of 20 elementary school children and six teachers in Newtown, Connecticut, and last year's terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, that killed 14 people. Here on International Edition, it is time to talk social media. What is trending? What are you thinking if you are indeed part of the social media world? The person right here, Andrew Palchesky, the International Edition social media guru, spends 24 hours a day immersed in that world. So we shall see what is overriding his life. What's going on?
Even when I'm sleeping, I've got the phone right next to me, ready to strike at any moment, look at what's trending.
I hear there's a new pill out for that, but go ahead. What's happening?
Well, Donald Trump, you know, nary a day goes by when Donald Trump isn't a top trending topic. But today he's trending for a number of different reasons. Of course, he fired Corey Lewandowski as campaign manager. So there's a lot of speculation on social media what that means for his campaign. There's questions about how much money he's raised or a lack of money that he's raised. Hashtag Trump so poor was trending for a while. People making fun of the fact that he is a very minuscule campaign coffer. He needs to keep loaning himself money.
Compared to Hillary Clinton, yeah.
Yeah, especially compared to Hillary Clinton. And then on a more serious note, over the weekend, a young man tried to reach for a police officer's gun at a Trump rally and said he was trying to assassinate Donald Trump. So Donald Trump's not having a great couple of days, and a lot of people noting that on social media, saying he's really got to turn things around, speculating, like I said, that Corey Lewandowski being fired and bringing on a different campaign manager might be the start of that process. But he's getting quite a lot of ridicule and quite a lot of attention on social media, for sure.
And a lot of problems inside the Republican Party for a number of people, quite a number of people who are not in favor of his candidacy.
Yeah, and then you have the Trump people on the other side who are taking to social media and saying, you know what, look how far we've come. This is a guy that we never expected to win the nomination. He's done that. So this might be a bump in the road, but he's got some time yet until the election. We've got a long way to go, and he's going to make a comeback. Whether he does or not, we'll see.
Donald Trump has saved a lot of money through the primary seasons using social media, correct?
Absolutely. A lot of free advertising. I mean, Donald Trump tweeting out, he says that he just kind of shouts it out to his assistants, or he just tweets it out himself, just captures a lot of social media attention. And they've done studies, actually, and said it can be millions, if not billions, of dollars in free advertising and free attention that you get from some of these social media comments. So he certainly has used social media to his advantage and saved some money that way.
Another of the trending topics, I would imagine, is Thursday's vote coming up in the UK on the so-called Brexit situation.
Yeah, it's not often you see celebrities trending because of their opinions on European Union policy or British political policy, but that's what we're seeing. We're seeing David Beckham has come out and said that he is going to support the Remain camp. He wants the UK to remain in the European Union. And his comments getting retweeted by none other than David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Jeremy Clarkson and James May, the two former hosts of Top Gear, did a whole YouTube video where they're explaining why they want to stay in. And you have the other celebrities on the other side, John Cleese and Joan Collins, the actress and author Joan Collins. She just tweeted out, she did Brexit, and then just had a whole bunch of emoji that she used. So she's on the Brexit side. John Cleese said that he wants to be out. If he thought there was a good reason to stay in, he would, but he's not. And this is actually something we're covering on our show, hashtag VOA, this week. So you can find out more about that at voanews.com/hashtag VOA and on Twitter and Facebook at hashtag VOA.
And what else has caught your eye?
The other big story today, hashtag National Selfie Day. So we're seeing tons.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There are two camps on social media. There are the people like you say, oh, this is ridiculous. And then there are people who embrace it and say, oh, selfies. And they're putting all these different selfies and pictures of themselves. And it's just regular people and celebrities that are doing it. Some things that I thought were really interesting, the selfies of animals. Animals have gotten into phones and been able to kind of press the button. So you have cats that have accidentally taken selfies. Serious note, the American Cancer Society is using it as an advocacy campaign. They're asking people who are cancer survivors or going through cancer treatment to share their selfies to show that they're strong and they're surviving. And then this statistic, which you might find very interesting, more people apparently in the past year have died from selfies than from shark attacks. And as we were talking about before we went on air, the selfie sticks, you know, you see so many tourists out there with selfie sticks. You're paying too much attention to getting that selfie. You might just walk into, you know, a tree or walk off a cliff or poke somebody with the selfie stick. So be careful out there. If you're celebrating National Selfie Day, do be careful. Don't, you know, hurt anybody with your selfies. It's all in good fun, but do be safe.
Yeah. All right. And how do people get in touch with you?
They can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
Andrew Palchesky, the International Edition social media guru. Thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you.
Oh, Among the top stories in the world today, Jordan said a car bomb exploded along its border with Syria, killing and wounding several Jordanian troops. It happened where tens of thousands of people fleeing the violence in Syria have sought refuge as they try to get into Jordan. Authorities say a British man arrested at a Donald Trump rally in Las Vegas this past weekend tried to grab a police officer's gun so he could kill the presidential candidate. A gathering of the International Olympic Committee upheld the ban on the Russian Athletics Federation, but kept the option open for some Russian track and field athletes to compete at the Rio Olympics as members of Russia's Olympic Committee. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says a team of astronomers has discovered the youngest fully formed exoplanet that has ever been detected. This new planet, called K233b, is only 11 million years old. Compared to the 4.5 billion year old Earth, this exoplanet is a mere newborn. The discovery was made using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope and a ground-based telescope at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii. The baby planet has been described as being a bit larger than Neptune and orbits its star once every 5 days at a distance of only 7.5 million kilometers, or almost 10 times closer to its star than Mercury is to our sun. Caltech's Eric Pettigura says the newborn planet will not only help scientists better understand how planets form, but will also provide fresh insight into the processes that led to the formation of Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
As VOA's International Edition continues, while the Islamic State launched counterattacks, forcing government forces back, all while trying to halt the advance of U.S.-backed Kurdish and Arab militia in northern Syria, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he was prepared to meet with dozens of State Department officials challenging U.S.-Syria policy. In a dissent channel memo issued last week, the 51 diplomats called for airstrikes against the forces of President Bashar al-Assad to force him to stop persistent violations of a cessation of hostilities. In comments Monday, Kerry said he read it and described it as very good. His spokesman John Kirby said Kerry thought it was a well-written argument.
And as for meeting with the authors, he has expressed an interest in meeting with at least some of them. I mean, there's a lot of them, so I don't know that we'll be able to pull off a single meeting with each and every one of them there, but he has expressed an interest in talking to them, and we'll do that in due course. The policy planning staff will be preparing a response, as is required. As for any espousal of the ideas, before, during, or after the fact of them being proffered in a dissent channel message, the secretary very much keeps private his advice and counsel to the president on policy matters. Obviously, we're going to respect that. He has made no bones about the fact that he is not content with the status quo in Syria. Too many people are dying. Too many people are being denied basic life-sustaining material, food, water, medicine, and there's been too little progress on the political track.
Kirby went on to say Kerry's comments about the memo should not be considered as a full-throated endorsement of the views in the dissent channel message. The New York Times, that's the newspaper that obtained a copy of the dissent memo, said while it's not unusual, the number of officials who signed on to it is large, if not unprecedented. Most are mid-level officials. Some are career diplomats involved in shaping Syria policy for the past 5 years. Regional analyst Stephen Zunes of the University of San Francisco told VOA's Victor Beatty it's a good thing that the U.S. officials are allowed, for moral or strategic reasons, to voice their opposition to stated policy.
People in the State Department, just as there are in many other circles, are deeply divided about what to do about Syria. People acknowledge that this is an enormous humanitarian crisis, but there are serious questions as to what would help. And even if it did help, at what risk of broader repercussions? Clearly, there are those in the State Department who feel very strongly that, out of both a moral imperative and long-term U.S. interest, that more direct military intervention, support for regime change, if you will, or at least a minimum amount of intervention to relieve the suffering population. But there's also the debate of whether this could work. Ironically, I think the bigger objections were raised from the Pentagon. And though historically it's been people in the State Department that have cautioned about military intervention, and the people in the Department of Defense who've been more eager to promote it. In this case, it might be the other way around, that unlike Libya, you know, we're talking about a government with a fully intact military, one with far more sophisticated anti-aircraft and other equipment, and it could indeed, you know, create a situation that could badly escalate the conflict, especially given the close Russian cooperation with the Assad regime.
Mr. Kerry says he's going to meet with this group. Surprising?
I think it shows a sign of respect that he takes their concern seriously. Indeed, I don't think there's anybody who has been following the situation in Syria closely, and certainly Secretary of State Kerry is one of those who isn't, frankly, torn about what should we do. And he has come down quite firmly, as has the president, you know, that additional military intervention by the United States would do more harm than good. Clearly, it's a judgment call, and he's willing to listen to those who believe it should go the other way.
Do you think this will change policy at all?
The President of the United States is Commander-in-Chief, and it's clearly his call. He knows it, they know it, and this would be true of any president. At the same time, Barack Obama, you know, more than almost any recent president, really trusts the judgment of people he believes are knowledgeable and fair-minded and not ideologically driven. So I think he will at least listen to them and consider them more than many recent presidents may have done. But it doesn't mean they will necessarily be able to convince him.
At the White House Monday, President Obama's spokesman Josh Earnest called the dissent procedure valuable and worthwhile, but he defended the president's Syria policy as having prevented the mistakes of previous administrations, citing the 2003 Iraq invasion. Earnest said U.S. policy is focused on defeating the Islamic State, not the Assad regime. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. The United States is the only developed country that does not mandate paid parental leave for its citizens. Well, that leaves working mothers and fathers with limited options when a new baby arrives. But a few states in this country have taken the lead in implementing paid leave policies. They include California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. New York just got on board, and in Washington, D.C., a paid family leave bill has been introduced, and it's now going through the legislative process. If it passes, lawmakers and residents are hopeful that the city will serve as a model for other states. VOA's Julie Tabo met a family in the nation's capital that's been advocating for that change.
Rob and Jessica Lott are the proud and happy parents of baby Shuley. Like most parents, they looked forward to her birth and the chance to spend time with her, especially during the early months of her life. But without mandated paid parental leave in the U.S., working parents like the Lotts must make arrangements for time off directly with their employers or use their vacation and sick leave hours.
When we had our daughter, my employer offered 4 weeks of paid parental leave, and Rob's employer offered no parental leave.
Fortunately, I was able to cobble the time together, and I was able to take 2 weeks, which was not enough. We made it enough, but I really wish I could have been home longer with Jess as she was recovering, and with Shuley when she was just weeks old.
That wish for more time may soon be granted for workers in Washington. The D.C. Paid Family Leave Act would provide paid leave for new parents. Lott has been actively involved in the campaign to get it passed. She recently met with D.C. Councilmember Charles Allen.
There's no leave that they get to take.
Who is a co-sponsor of the legislation.
I think that when an employer provides paid family leave, I think that they become a stronger employer. They become a more attractive place to work.
The legislation would impose a 1% payroll tax to create a pool to cover paid leave. But that wouldn't be enough, says Mark Friedman of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and would place an unfair burden on employers.
Our feeling is that employers provide leave as they are able to provide leave. If they can't afford it, then that's generally why they don't provide it.
U.S. Representative Loretta Sanchez is from California, one of several states that requires paid leave.
Small businesses, especially startups, are really having a hard time sometimes meeting payrolls. But anything that we could help to ensure that small businesses have a continuity of the business they're in and yet have an opportunity to have their employees take some time to take care of a loved one would be something I'd be interested in.
I don't have the ideal sweet spot plan to offer. I could tell you that in various ways, it would have to be structured as an incentive instead of a mandate. There should be some way that employers can put in place a system of leave that meets some description, but they can do it with flexibility on their end.
However it's designed, advocates will continue to push for paid parental leave for all U.S. citizens.
Hi, sweetie.
The goal is to have the city lead on leave.
Julie Tabo, VOA News,
yeah.
Washington.
Crazy girl.
And we end with this story. Millions of people twisted their bodies today in complex positions in celebration of International Yoga Day. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi joined a crowd of 30,000 school kids and other residents for a mass yoga session. Before starting, Modi urged people to make yoga a part of their lives, saying the practice, which began in ancient India, does not differentiate between the rich and poor and is accessible to all. And they all hobbled away. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Wagner Roberts. I'm Ira Meldon in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the invitation of the Cambodian government, the United States and Cambodian militaries conducted humanitarian assistance events and military-to-military subject matter expert changes in Kampot Province, Cambodia this month as part of Pacific Angel 2016. During this mission, approximately 80 U.S.-Cambodian servicemen and women, along with personnel from Australia, Vietnam, and Thailand, worked together in partnership with local NGOs to provide humanitarian assistance to the residents of Kampot Province. Pacific Angel is a joint and combined humanitarian assistance mission conducted in various countries throughout the Indo-Asia-Pacific region with the active participation and leadership of the U.S. Air Force. Pacific Angel includes general health, dental, optometry, pediatrics, physical therapy, and engineering programs, as well as various humanitarian aid and disaster relief subject matter expert exchanges. The mission enhances participating nations' humanitarian assistance and disaster relief capabilities while providing needed services to people throughout the region. In Cambodia, engineers worked on reconstruction projects for four local schools and two health centers in the city of Kampot, and medical service providers conducted health service outreach in the Twik Chu and Kampon Trak districts in Kampot province. The subject matter expert exchanges between the two militaries focused on public health emergencies and humanitarian aid and disaster response. Since 2007, Pacific Angel missions have improved the lives of tens of thousands of people across the region, while ensuring that the region's militaries are prepared to work together to address humanitarian crises. This was the fourth Pacific Angel mission conducted in Cambodia. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Cambodia, to help improve the lives of people in Cambodia and throughout the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.